Hey guys, welcome into this latest episode of the Euro Snob Podcast. My name is Alex John. Unfortunately, I'm not joined by Ian today, but I figured I'd still try to record something and get something to you guys because I know it's been a little while. Certainly, there's a lot to talk about. From an Arsenal perspective, none of it's good. Obviously, for those who didn't get a chance to watch, or did get a chance to watch for that matter, Arsenal came up against Bayern Munich yesterday and lost the first leg of their Champions League tie 5-1. I don't want this to turn into a rant session, just because I don't think that's necessarily productive. Just looking at how the game unfolded, I think that's probably the most frustrating thing. You know, obviously Bayern got an early goal off an Arjen Robben shot where he, to no one's surprise, except for apparently our defense, cut in from the right onto a stronger left foot and curled a shot into the top left corner. And Arsenal fell behind early, and right away you're already chasing the game and you're already chasing the tie, and I think that sort of set the tone to some extent. You know, Bayern had the lion's share of possession in the first half, but Arsenal were able to create chances, and I guess that was the encouraging thing at that point in the game. And in fact, Arsenal were able to equalize in the 30th minute off an Alexis penalty. Pretty clear penalty. Robert Lewandowski kicked Lauren Koscielny in the box. Arsenal got a spot kick. And Alexis actually took a terrible penalty, but the shot unfortunately was saved by Manuel Neuer, but fortunately came back to Alexis, who then was able to bury the rebound on the third try. So actually Arsenal were in a good position going into the second half, 1-1, and you've got your away goal. You know, kind of going back a little bit though, when I saw this lineup come out, I had a bad feeling right away, because I think the vast majority of people on Twitter and journalists and pundits were all kind of the same mind that we really needed to go with a 4-3-3 formation to combat Bayern's ability to maintain the ball in midfield. I think for myself, I would have gone with Granit Xhaka, Mohamed Elneny, and then Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, who's been dynamite in midfield in recent games. And then I would have played Ozil either at the base of a diamond, or sorry, at the tip of a diamond in a 4-4-2, or played him wide right with the ability to tuck in into midfield in, you know, as part of the attacking three. And then I also would have played Alexis and Danny Welbeck. Instead, what we got was the typical Arsenal 4-2-3-1, Granit Xhaka and Francis Coquelin in that midfield two, Iwobi on the left side, no Danny Welbeck, and then Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain shifted out to the right side. So right away, I kind of figured, you know, Bayern's going to dominate the ball, because with that midfield two, you're just not going to have much of the ball, unfortunately, when one of your players is incapable of playing a forward pass and shies away from the ball at every possibility. So I was kind of concerned at that point, and I didn't understand the lack of Welbeck, given his defensive work rate, given his ability to play on the counter, and given the aerial threat that he presents. And just given the fact that, you know, he has come back from injury, but he's been back for about a month now, and I think he's probably pretty close to full fitness. Even if you got 70 minutes out of him, I think it would have been better than what we got. But regardless, we went into halftime, tied at 1-1. And from there, it all kind of went south. Lauren Koscielny suffered an injury, and Arsenal basically capitulated from there. Gabriel came in, and within a few minutes, it was 3-1, 4-1, 5-1. So I think it's safe to say the tie is over. probably the most frustrating thing from an Arsenal perspective is just how quickly things capitulated. One thing went wrong, Koscielny's injury, and the rest of the team just completely fell apart. And it's, as much as we as Arsenal fans hate media narratives and this idea that, you know, once Arsenal gets to the knockout stages of the Champions League, they fall apart against better opposition, ultimately we do nothing to disprove that. And that narrative is only going to continue moving forward until we prove otherwise. And quite frankly, I'm not sure with this manager that will ever change. You know, just looking at the defensive frailties that really plagued us yesterday, you know, for Robert Lewandowski's go-ahead goal, you let Philipp Lahm overlap, put a cross in, perfect cross in, that we don't close down, and then Lewandowski gets a free run on a header. David Ospina had no chance. You know, for some of the later goals, you've got Mustafi pointing at nobody in particular, pointing at Bellerin, I guess, but nobody really, to mark someone. And then, meanwhile, space opens up right through the heart of the defense, and Bayern get their goal, Thiago. And it just got worse from there, unfortunately. And what you saw was an Arsenal team with absolutely no tactical awareness. And ultimately, that starts with the man on top. That starts with Arsene Wenger. I'm not sure how you go into that tie at Bayern trying to play a midfield two. You know, some people might point to the fact that at least for the first hour it worked, and then when Koscielny went out, everything changed. But if your system depends on one player staying fit, it's not much of a system. And that's sort of the argument that people have brought up about Santi Cazorla. You know, people have said, oh, well, if Cazorla was fit, then we could do this or that. You know, if one player going out changes everything, you might need to reevaluate things to some extent. Now, obviously, if it's a Leo Messi or Cristiano Ronaldo or someone like that, you know, it's a little bit different. But, you know, with the midfield personnel we have, we should be able to put together a somewhat cohesive midfield. You know, instead we put in a guy like Francis Coquelin, who couldn't even hack it at Freiburg, and now has come back into the Arsenal side, and for some reason has become automatic first choice, which I don't think anyone understands at this point. You know, I'm not going to turn this into a Coquelin bash session. He is what he is. He's just not that good. He's a player who is, you know, suffers from poor positioning. He slides in, leaves tons of space behind him, and then leaves it up to Granit Xhaka to basically clean up the mess that he's made. And Xhaka doesn't have the mobility to do that on his own in a midfield too. And then, you know, he also is just a complete liability in possession. And I saw a stat yesterday that just kind of was mind-boggling to me. In the 77 minutes that Francis Coquelin played, he completed 6 passes. I think it's pretty safe to say that even any one of us, you know, myself or anyone listening to this really, could complete 6 passes in 77 minutes, even by accident. You know, all that shows me is that that's a player who is not comfortable on the ball, who doesn't want the ball, and you know, it basically turned into what we feared. You know, at 1-1, at least you're in the tie. Hell, even at 3-1, you're in the tie, because at least at that point, a 2-0 win at home puts you through, because you got your away goal. But at 5-1, tie's over. You know, I'm not even sure how we approach the second leg, to be quite honest. Is that a situation where you just kind of cut your losses and say, yep, we're done? Or is it going to be one of those Arsenal moments as in previous seasons where we go out and we win 2 or 3 nil, but it's obviously not good enough to put us through? The truth of the matter is this, though. I think, you know, it's going to turn into, oh, Wenger out, Wenger out, Wenger out. I mean, I don't even think there's a debate to be had anymore, to be quite honest. And I know some of you might disagree with me on that. I just think the man's time has come. it's time for him to make an announcement. It's time for this fan base to move on. It's time for this club to start a succession plan. You know, I don't know exactly who that would encompass or what that would encompass at this point. It's not necessarily that I trust the board to do the right thing or from a football perspective, because there's no football people on the board. And we don't have a director of football. And, you know, this club has basically just been Arsene Wenger carrying this load for so many years now. And, you know, ever since David Dean left, and, you know, he's had to shoulder the responsibility of basically running our transfers, of squad planning, and of management, and it just stretched him too thin. And you could tell in the post-game interview, he's just a broken man at this point. And it's sad to see a legend like that, a man who's brought all of us so much happiness, and so many terrific memories, and so much brilliant football, look like a shell of that man now. It really is sad to see, and I think the writing is on the wall. I think we need to see an announcement from Arsene Wenger or Arsenal Football Club very soon that he's going to be finished at the end of the season and the club is actively looking at replacements. And, you know, this is something I threw out on Twitter last night. The thing about being an Arsenal fan is for a long time, at least, even when we weren't winning titles, we clung to this idea that Arsenal play the game the right way and Arsenal play beautiful football and Arsenal, you know, create these moments of magic on the pitch. I don't think you can say that anymore. You know, we might have a couple of those moments a season, but certainly not with the consistency that you would expect from a club with a global brand like Arsenal. You know, you have a moment like the Giroud scorpion kick, or the Wilshire goal against Norwich a couple years ago, you know, where everything clicks into place for one moment. And you say, oh, see, that's Arsenal. But for the lion's share of time now, you just don't see that. The football is slow, it's sloppy, and it's certainly nowhere near the level that it needs to be to compete at the top of the Premier League, or certainly the Champions League, if you're playing teams like Bayern, Barcelona, Real Madrid, PSG, Juventus. So, you know, we don't even have that to cling on to anymore. And I'm not going to dwell on this. It's time for a change. And I think, you know, you have to start looking to names like Massimiliano Allegri, Thomas Tuchel, Leonardo Jardim at Monaco. You know, those are probably the three that I would focus on at this point. All three kind of bring different strengths to the table. I think Tuchel brings that ability to press higher up the pitch, play with tempo. He knows how to utilize young players, and I guess with him, the issue is, you know, defensive solidity. With Massimiliano Allegri, you see him winning titles with Juventus, you see his tactical flexibility, you see his ability to utilize squad depth, and not just stick with the same 11. You know, he knows how to use his squad and get the best out of them. But then you also look and you say, well, he's winning titles with Juventus, and what competition do they really have? But I think that's selling him short, because Serie A has really improved within the last, you know, 4 or 5 years, I'd say. You've got a Napoli team that plays really good football. You know, you have AC Milan on the rise now. Roma's a good team. Inter, on and off, but certainly they have some good personnel. So I don't think winning a title at Juventus is the lock that everyone seems to think it is. But Allegri's made it look fairly easy. So that's one option. Leonardo Jardim, though, that's kind of an option I've been thinking about more and more lately. You know, Monaco on top of Serie A, and, you know, he's been able to bring through so many talented young players, like Kylian Mbappe and all these different players that have really shined under the Portuguese manager. And we saw a few years ago when we played Monaco in the Champions League, he knows how to coach defense. But at the same time, Monaco are also putting up goals for fun this season. So it's not like we would just bunker down and somehow lose the Arsenal philosophy. So I think that's an option that I would definitely look at. Obviously you guys might have some other options that you like, and I'd certainly love to hear your opinions and throw them out to me on Twitter. But I mean, it is what it is. I think we all see the writing on the wall for Arsene Wenger, and we can come back and we can discuss all the tactical issues, all the selection issues. At some point, it just becomes a broken record. And at some point, we're just talking about the same thing over and over and over again. And if the same problems are repeating themselves with different personnel, you look to the man on top, and that's Arsene Wenger. And I apologize for being repetitive because I know I've said that before. But it's the truth. And for as much as we as Arsenal fans, although not everyone is listening, who's listening is an Arsenal fan, obviously, but for as much as myself and other Arsenal fans look at us as this global brand, and we are, the performance on the pitch doesn't match the club's reputation. And, we're, what, 10 points off the lead in the Premier League. It's going to be a struggle just to get top four, especially because we have Liverpool coming up next weekend. We have Sutton United in the FA Cup on Monday, and imagine losing that one. If you think you saw a meltdown after the Bayern game, oh boy, I don't know, probably not seen anything yet if we lose that one. Especially if we don't have Koscielny healthy. It could be very shaky to make top four. And for a new manager coming in, I don't think you want a new manager to have to deal with the Europa League and playing in these, difficult away grounds. And it's harder to attract players because you want to bring in a new manager who's going to attract top players. Obviously it's different for Manchester United, who are not in the Champions League, but we're still able to attract the likes of Pogba and Ibra and Eric Bailly. But Arsenal just don't quite have that capability at this point, unfortunately. So, it is what it is. I think I was at work yesterday during the game, so I came home and watched it afterwards. I didn't know the score. Going into the half, I felt great. When I saw things go south, unfortunately, I wasn't surprised, and that's the sad part. I think there's a certain resignation that has set in amongst Arsenal fans, where yes, there's the initial 10, 15 minutes of anger and frustration, and then it's just, oh well, there's another Champions League crusade gone. But it is what it is, and I'm still going to enjoy watching the competition. In a stark contrast to Arsenal, we saw PSG go up against Barcelona. Sorry, PSG against Barcelona on Tuesday, and that was an absolute clinic from PSG. Unai Emery can't say enough good about how he prepped that PSG team for that game. Starting from the lineup, he put together a three in midfield that was dynamic, that was energetic, that was skilled, that was technical, that had legs. You had Blaise Matuidi, you had Marco Verratti, and you had Adrian Rabiot. I mean, Rabiot is becoming one of the best young deep-lying midfielders in the world. Verratti, same thing. I mean, his ability to play from deep, his ability to make those incisive passes, and Matuidi's engine that very few players can match. I mean, they harassed, they bothered, they destroyed Barcelona, in all honesty. They made Barcelona look slow, lethargic. They won the ball back high up the pitch. You had Draxler and Di Maria playing on the wings, cutting in, causing problems. Their movement completely bamboozled Barcelona, and they were able to press those fullbacks and center backs. And then Cavani's movement, his ability to stretch the defense, it all came into play. And then, you know, defensively, for PSG, you had Meunier at right back constantly getting forward. You had the young French center back, whose name escapes me right now, but he was, you know, he's a young player making his first Premier League, I mean, first Champions League start, and you wouldn't have known because he was absolutely fantastic. And I mean, it was just a clinic for Unai Emery, and conversely, it was an absolute shambles from Barcelona, and you just don't come to expect that from this Barcelona. But perhaps, you know, age is finally setting in with a lot of these different players, with the likes of Iniesta, and, you know, Busquets isn't old, but certainly at this point, he's put a lot of miles on those legs. Also, I just found that the name of the PSG center back that I was trying to refer to earlier is Presnel Kimpembe, who was paired with Marquinhos at center back. I mean, kid was outstanding. That kid's got a bright future. So, you know, PSG really took it to them. And at 4-0, you got to sort of assume that that tie is over, because Barcelona's going to have to press forward to score at least four goals. And you have to think, with PSG's ability on the break, they would be able to counter and, you know, potentially nick at least one goal, if not two, and then put that tie really out of reach. The other Champions League ties, Real Madrid-Napoli. Napoli actually got an early goal off a very smart play from Lorenzo Insigne, who caught Keylor Navas out of the goal and put Napoli up early. But Real Madrid came back with goals from Benzema, Toni Kroos, and Casemiro. And sorry, my cat is biting me right now, so if you see me yelp, that's why. Or if you hear me yelp, that's why. So Real Madrid beat Napoli 3-1 at home in the first leg of their tie. I don't think Napoli's out of that one, though, because I think Napoli can certainly score at home, and you know that that home crowd is going to be energetic and really, really enthused to see their team in Champions League knockout tie. And then you had Benfica take a 1-0 win at home. They'll take that one back to Dortmund, where they'll play Borussia Dortmund in the second leg in a few weeks. Dortmund had their chances. I mean, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang was shockingly bad with some of the chances he missed. It was a surprise to see, certainly. You know, I think Dortmund, for all intents and purposes, played a good game. They created chances, they just didn't put them away, and they didn't get their away goal. So now Benfica goes to Dortmund, you know, probably seeking to keep things solid and tight at the back, and then, you know, potentially hit Dortmund on the counter. So that tie is kind of up in the air too. You know, it's ironic that it's Arsenal and Barcelona that are both completely out of their ties at this point. You know, looking forward, get some good games next week. The one I'm looking forward to is Monaco and Manchester City. I think that's going to be a fantastic tactical battle with Jardim and Guardiola. I'm curious to see how those teams line up. You know, the thing at least about being an Arsenal fan at this point is, you know, we're not going to get far in this competition. That's the sad truth of it. But I still enjoy the beauty of the competition and seeing some of these other teams who do have tactical flexibility and who do cope under a little bit of pressure. It's cool to see them do their thing. But yeah, I, you know, sorry to ramble. I know this was not the most cohesive podcast we had, but, you know, certainly life gets in the way sometimes, so we don't get episodes up as often as we'd like, but I figured I'd just get some thoughts out there about the Champions League and Arsenal in specific. I think, you know, a lot of the talking points can become a bit repetitive at this point. I mean, the one thing, you're going to see certain media narratives repeat themselves now. I mean, I saw people slating Mesut Ozil for not closing down on Robin's first goal. No, that was Francis Coquelin's man to mark, and Coquelin showed him inside, let him cut inside, and that didn't close him down. And I think Iwobi and Gibbs had some fault there as well. I mean, yeah, Ozil moved to where Xabi Alonso was to cut that pass off. I don't think he shoulders any blame for that first goal. But, you know, it's fashionable to blame Mesut Ozil for everything, really. You know, having said that, I think there are questions to ask about what type of system we should utilize to get the best out of him, because this 4-2-3-1 really limits him when you don't have midfielders who can get him the ball, when you don't have a midfield behind him. If you had a guy like Kante who cleans up everything deep and then gets it forward as soon as possible, you know, to your other central midfielder who could then push forward to Ozil, it's different. But Coquelin doesn't have that ability because his positioning is terrible and he's useless on the ball. Xhaka doesn't necessarily have the mobility, but also he's outnumbered in midfield, so he rarely can get on the ball. You know, so with the 4-2-3-1 against smaller teams, yeah, it can work, of course, we've seen it. But in these types of games, you just wonder, how do you get the best out of Mesut Ozil? Do you move to a 4-4-2 diamond? Do you move to a 4-3-3? Hopefully the next manager figures that out, because of the two, I feel like Mesut Ozil is more likely to stay at Arsenal than Alexis is. I think, I'm not sure Mesut Ozil demands the fee on the transfer market that Alexis would, just based on their productivity and, you know, based on how things have unfolded during their time here. I mean, I love Mesut Ozil. I think he's one of the best creative players in the world, but just looking at it from a practical perspective, I'm not sure what big club would necessarily need him at this point. You know, like a Bayern Munich could use him, but look at the midfield three they put out yesterday. Thiago, Vidal, and Xabi Alonso, they completely bossed us off the pitch. I thought Thiago was outstanding. You know, his ability to find those little pockets of space, play through the lines when he plays from deep. When he plays higher up the pitch, he found their attacking players quickly. He got into good attacking spots. And so you just wonder, where does a guy like Mesut Ozil fit? And I think he could still have a very bright future at Arsenal. He's still an incredible player, world class on his day. But we need to figure out a system that gets the best out of him. But I do apologize for that ramble. I saw someone tweet something yesterday about Ozil being at fault for the first goal, and it just kind of pissed me off because I think that's just perpetuating this media narrative that people are too lazy to question, because I guess he's just become an easy scapegoat for our problems. I know he put in more tackles than Francis Coquelin did yesterday, and that's our supposed defensive midfielder, so that should tell you something right there about how that game unfolded. But yeah, I just wanted to get some thoughts out there about the game. Certainly shoot me any comments on Twitter. You can find me at UFGoonerAJ. You can find the podcast at EuroSnobPod. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/EuroSnobPod. And I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts about potentially who the next Arsenal manager should be, who do you think is going to win the Champions League, and anything like that. But until next time, have a good week, and next time we talk, we'll hopefully be after Arsenal at least advance in the FA Cup. Or if not, then the world might have imploded. But all right, have a good one, guys. Thanks.